Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 344, Dream Knitting and Lots of Stitching. Wednesday, April 2nd, 2025. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. Each time I record an episode, I post show notes, photographs, and links to things I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. In this episode, I'll be talking about upcoming news and events, my current knitting and stitching projects, some baking that I've been doing, dream knitting, and I'll close with Off the Shelf in celebration of National Poetry Month. This audio podcast is ad-free, thanks to folks who sponsor me using Ko-fi. I'm so thankful for folks who make a monthly or one-time contribution, and each quarter I offer up a prize. The quarter one prize is a $60 gift certificate to Knit Spin Farm, and the wonderful Joanna Spring dyes amazing self-striping yarns as well as tonals, and she also dyes beautiful fiber. The lucky winner of the quarter one prize is Linda Spencer. Congratulations, Linda. Get in contact with me and I will give you all the information you need so that you can claim your prize. I'm planning for the quarter two prize to be some kind of festival prize pack. I have plans to head to Maryland Sheep and Wool Festival at the beginning of May, and there are some other spring fiber events that happen nearby. So I'm thinking that I will use some of the funds that I collect through Ko-fi to put together a really nice selection of things that are available at the festival and offer them up as a prize. To be in the running for any of these prizes, all you need to do is make a one-time contribution or become a monthly contributor during that quarter. And typically, I make the announcement of the winner in the episode following the end of that quarter. So around summer solstice will be the time of the next drawing. This is the fifth year that Laura Nelkin has hosted the Knit for Food Knit-a-thon. And this year I'm participating, not just by making a financial contribution, but actually seeking donations on my own and hosting a spot for knitters on the day of the Knit-a-thon, which is Saturday, April 5th, this coming Saturday. I set a goal for myself of raising $1,000. I want to thank all the folks who have sponsored me so far, because quite a few of you listen to the podcast. Thank you so much. You have helped me get very, very close to my goal. I think we're at over $800 at this point, and there are still a few more days to go. On Saturday, April 5th, from noon to 3 p.m., I will be knitting at Orange Coffee Art Music in Delaware Water Gap. It's a great place to come, very well lit, and hang out, have some great coffee. There are also nice pastries and light fare. And I'm hoping that some of my Last Tuesday Stitchers regulars might show up. But if you're in the area, you are most welcome. I have included this spot on the Knit-a-thon website. So if you're looking for a place to knit on the day of the Knit-a-thon, you will find Orange Coffee Art Music and my contact information if you have any questions. I would love to see some fellow listeners and knitters there. Next week is the Hudson Valley Textile Projects Annual Summit on Wednesday the 9th, actually a week from today. And there is a pre-summit social on the evening of the 8th. I am planning to attend both. This time in my new role as a member of the advisory council to the Hudson Valley Textile Project. Last week, I was able to participate in two Zoom calls, one where I met the other members of the advisory council, and a second where I mostly just listened on to the annual meeting of the Hudson Valley Textile Project board as they reported out on their activities and their finances for the year. I have several times attended the summit. I've enjoyed it every time. This year, Isabella Rossellini is a keynote speaker for the event, and I may be taking on some responsibilities to assist and support the board and the council as they host the event. I don't know, but I'll be on hand if needed. And I'm really excited about traveling up to Kingston for this event. If you've been listening to the podcast for any amount of time, you know that I have long championed the work of the Hudson Valley Textile Project, and I'm very honored and gratified to be involved in it in this deeper way. And I look forward to telling you listeners about activities affiliated with the Hudson Valley Textile Project as I continue my role. The knitting that I've been doing is the same knitting that I mentioned in my previous episode. I resuscitated and revived a very old whip, which is the Inspira cowl. And it's knit with two different strands of Noro fingering weight yarn in a corrugated rib pattern. It's super colorful. The yarn is super tangly and frustrating, but I think the overall effect makes it worth it. And I've actually knit on this project even a little more than I anticipated. So it's my ongoing take-along project. It's small enough to tuck into my handbag and take with me in most situations. And if there's any waiting that needs to be done, I'm very lucky to have that with me and just knit on it. Everyone who sees it comments on how much they like the colors and is wondering what it is or what it's going to be. So that is, for now, my on-the-go project. And then at home, I have the rather substantial pressed flowers shawl designed by Amy Christophers. This has been knit by many, many knitters, and I'm finally joining in. I'm very much enjoying the knit. The mosaic knitting is a little bit slow. It's also on DK worsted weight yarn, which is a little slower going for me, but it's absolutely beautiful, and I'm enjoying both of the yarns that I'm working with. For the main color, I'm using Bare Naked Wool Stone Soup Worsted in, I think it's a marble colorway. All of their colorways are natural colors, so this is a natural, very pale color. It's a very farmy yarn, a very toothsome yarn. I love it. I really do love it. And I've been thinking about other weights of this yarn or maybe other natural colors and knitting a garment with this yarn at some point. I really enjoy working with it. And then for the pop of color, I'm using yarn that was my birthday gift last year, which is Making Tracks Light in the Aurora Borealis colorway. The three skeins I have are three very different skeins in terms of the colors that they're producing. So I started with the brightest set of colors. And I think this also has the shortest repeats of colors or shortest amounts of colors. And so this seemed appropriate for the beginning of the shawl because the rows get longer and longer as this shawl goes on. And so I'm still using skein one of my contrast color, but I'm onto skein two of the main color. And that, you know, the rows are getting long. It can feel like a little bit of a slog, but then I look at the overall effect on the shawl and it's absolutely beautiful. I've included a photo in the show notes for today and will keep my project page updated. Until I make significant progress on that or complete that shawl, I don't think I'll be casting on any other knitting because of the stitching projects that I'm working on, which I will talk about in a moment. So instead, I've been just doing some dream knitting and just looking at a lot of patterns for sweaters and knit tees that are more warm weather garments, just looking at both new designs that are coming out as well as some that have been around for a while. And I wanted to just talk briefly about three that I've been pondering. Two are designed by Thea Coleman, and I don't think I have knit anything by Thea Coleman, although I've admired many of her designs. She's certainly a very popular designer. So the one that caught my attention recently is a tank that she knit in a very simple lace and a very rustic yarn called The Last Word. It looks beautiful. It looks like a great candidate for some hand-spun yarn in a natural color. That's appealing to me because the amount of hand-spun required would be, you know, a lot less than most sweaters because it's just a vest with no sleeves and also it's lace, so it's open. And according to her notes, the lace works up quickly and is easily memorized. Lots of folks are knitting this right now and giving really good reviews of the pattern and how much they like it. Thea Coleman also wrote in her notes about this design when it first came out that she will be testing it in a yarn that's more of like a summer weight yarn with some linen or flax content, something like that. And I'm interested to see how that goes and what she thinks of it or if other knitters knit that up in a yarn that's more suitable for warm weather. Another one, because I was just, you know, of course, browsing Thea Coleman patterns, another one that is not new is the Grapefruit Pink Lady, which is also some lace and is more of a, it's kind of a tee without any sleeves. It seems like the shoulder just extends, you know, onto the arm a little bit and gives the appearance of sleeves. Thea Coleman writes that it has like very nice coverage in terms of wearing a bra or a tank top underneath. And so that also seems very appealing and might even be a good pattern candidate for some yarn that I have in stash. Two summers ago, when I took a workshop at Peters Valley, I did some dyeing of Green Mountain Spinnery cotton comfort yarn. I had purchased yarn, I think during the pandemic, they were selling some lots of yarn that were like either underweight skeins or overweight skeins. They were really just trying to clean out. And even though the colors that I purchased were really not interesting to me at all, I like the fiber content of Cotton Comfort. It's 80% wool, 20% cotton. and I really like the way it feels against my skin. And so I had 4 skeins in 2 different colors, and I over dyed them during the workshop because we did a lot of dyeing and had really big dye vats. One is a blue and the other one is sort of like a mint green, like a spring green, something that I don't usually gravitate toward, but it's rather attractive and it's not a lot of yardage. So knitting, a full size sweater with sleeves is out of the question. And I've been thinking about that yarn and wondering what I could make it into. Grapefruit Pink Lady is certainly a candidate. And then the final pattern in my dream knitting that I've had my eye on, it really is dream knitting because the pattern isn't even out yet. I think it's being tested. This is by Carolyn Skargard Benson, known as Igionet on Ravelry. That's her design name. She is testing now the Lyra blouse, which is a beautiful sweater with 3/4 length sleeves. It has sort of an oversized feel to it. It's knit in a finer yarn, I believe, and it would be a good candidate for some yarn with linen content. And the what seems to me is like the eye-catching feature is that there's a lot of twisted rib detail in this pattern. So I've been watching that. I'm interested in knowing what test knitters say about it when they've completed it. And, looking at all of the specs for the pattern when she releases it. That certainly is, it has a little more coverage than the other two. So I'm not sure how much it would be like a hot weather sweater, but maybe a warm weather sweater. And it's certainly very beautiful. And I had such a wonderful experience knitting the Soul blouse, which is, I think it's my favorite garment that I've knit. And certainly it's got a lot of wear. So I trust her as a designer, and I'm eager to try another one of her patterns in the future. So there's been a lot of stitching going on and sewing adjacent projects. My friend Dee came back from a trip to Denver in the fall, and I was gifted a pattern book of Japanese sewing patterns it's titled Atelier Refouteur. And there are a number of very, very beautiful, very elegant designs. Almost everything in this pattern book speaks to me. I've worked with exactly 1 Japanese sewing pattern in the past, and it was under Mary Beth's tutelage. It was super simple, and this pattern only had a front and a back. So that's not a ton of experience, and I didn't have to figure anything out by myself. This time, I did a little bit of research about Japanese sewing patterns, and one thing that I saw many, many times in reading blogs is that they don't include seam allowance, which is fine. You need to trace off the pattern and add the seam allowance. So this book came with 2 pages, 4 sides of, the overlapping sewing patterns, and it's all labeled in Japanese, so it takes a little bit of work to find all of the pieces. Thankfully and unexpectedly, all of the pieces for the pattern I was interested in were on the same side of 1 page. And that hasn't happened with other sewing patterns that are printed this way that I've done in English. So at least they were all on the same surface. And then I discovered for myself I'm sure everyone else knows this, but I did not realize how effective Google Translate is in translating from photos of text. So I took a lot of photos of text and used Google Translate to just clarify that I was getting the correct pattern pieces. The pattern I'm interested in making first could be one of the more difficult ones in the book. It's called the Tuck Robe Dress. It's a duster length robe, essentially. It belts at the waist and it doesn't have any sleeves. So it's kind of like an over wrap sort of light duster. And the defining feature is that it has several tucks of fabric that are sewn in place along the shoulder seam, and continued that pleating continues down the bodice of the robe, and then it kind of lets go at the waistline so that the bottom of the garment is fuller. It looks really elegant. The model is wearing it over pants, which I think is very attractive and interesting. It would work well in a beautiful drapey linen fabric. And so I set to cutting out, tracing and cutting out all of these pattern pieces. And I was taking a lot of photographs and scanning things and reading the translations. And then I thought, there must be a place in this book, just like any pattern book, where there's some general information about the designs and how to sew them. And so I looked through the book and found that part and translated it. And one of the first pieces of information on that page was that all of the seam allowances had been included in the pattern pieces. This was after I had traced them faithfully, looked at all the seam allowance amounts, which were very faithfully marked in the book, and added them. It took me about an hour and a half to add those seam allowances to all the pattern pieces, but there was already seam allowance. So it took me about 5 minutes to trim all of that away. And that is the extent of my work on this project so far. I don't have fabric for it, so I would need to look for that. And I have some other sewing projects coming up and in progress. So for right now, with the Japanese tuck robe dress, it's very beautiful. But I'm going to be setting it on the back burner for a while I work on some other things. One of those things is my 100 days project, the Alabama Channon dress and bolero. I had a goal of completing all of the embellishments on the bolero by the end of March, and I did. And I have begun to stitch together the pieces of the bolero. I got pretty far, and this morning I took it all apart because I think my seam allowances are too much. All of the boleros that I see in the Alabama Channon sewing books are only one layer of fabric. Mine is two because I've done some cutting, reverse applique, some beading, some couching, a lot of stitching. And so even with a small seam allowance, I'm eating up a lot more fabric than I have on the other boleros I've made. And I cut out the same size that I've always made because I've sewn quite a few of these, but on my machine. This time I want to hand stitch them. And so I think the trouble with my first attempt is I just took too much fabric for the seam allowance. So it's very easy to do the hand sewing on these knit garments since it's basically just running stitch. And it's pretty easy to snip the ends and pull it all out and start over, which is what I think I'm going to be doing later this afternoon, kind of giving it another try. I also thought a little more carefully about the construction of this garment in hand sewing it versus machine sewing it. And I don't really want to set in a sleeve with my hand sewing. So I think I'm going to attach the sleeve while the bodice of this bolero is flat and then seam the whole underarm and the probably 2 to 3 inches of side seam underneath all in one go. And I'm kind of deliberating about doing flat felled seams for all of it or letting some of the seams just be loose inside and not stitching them down. It's a lot of decision making. So I'm working slowly and deliberately, kind of doing a lot of picking out along the way. And I'm well on my way of reaching my goal of having this bolero as well as the matching dress completed by the end of April. So that's been going quite well. I'm really pleased with how all of the embellishments went. And I'm glad that I took so many risks with the embellishment and tried so many different things. The bolero is kind of like a sampler of everything I know and I have learned about doing Alabama Channon style embellishments. And I think just the muted colors of the garment kind of unify it. So yeah, I'm pleased with it and eager to continue working on it. Also in the hand stitching department, I have treated myself to an online course with Cal Patch to make a hand-sewn shirt with a partial placket. There are a number of sewing skills involved in this course that I have not tackled, and so I'm very excited to work on them, not only with Cal, who's an amazing teacher, but also with a small group of like-minded individuals who are interested in hand sewing. And our course starts this evening. So I've been thinking about all of the features that I want to include in this shirt. And in our Slack channel, Cal encouraged us to make a sketch of what we envisioned our completed shirt to look like. And so I have done that. I even got out my watercolors and put a little color onto this sketch. I'm really embracing the opportunity to challenge myself with this in unfamiliar territory. And I've included the sketch in the show notes for this episode. The one thing I'm not sure, well, I'll talk first about the things I am sure about. I would like it to have a traditional kind of collar, the partial placket. Everyone is doing a partial placket in this course. That is sort of the unifying element of the course. And then I would like a high-low hem with a side slit so that I can wear this with leggings or with flared pants as kind of an interesting layering piece. What else? Oh, the back will have a yoke, which I'm excited about, and I think I would like to have a pleat and maybe like a little bit of extra fabric in the back. And I would like it to have sleeves with cuffs. I had been thinking about 3/4 length sleeves, and that's what I drew into my sketch. But there are a couple of commercially made linen shirts that I have. One in particular from Old Navy. I think actually it's a dress. I've had it forever and it's worn like steel, but it has the tabs that sort of fold up so you can roll your cuff and then you can button it on the outside of your shirt. I really love that feature. And since this will be a special hand-sewn shirt, and one of the techniques that Cal will be teaching us is hand-sewn buttonholes, I think that would be a really nice feature to add to this shirt. So I may be amending that detail and going for full-length sleeves with cuffs, and then those tabs, which are, I learned that they're sometimes called Swiss tabs, and I'm not sure why. Just as I was making the commitment to register for this course, I saw that Check Your Thread had an episode featuring Cal Patch talking about mending and embellishments on garments. So I can recommend, because I can always recommend when Cal appears on a podcast and talks about something, she's so passionate and informative. I recommend episode 176 of Check Your Thread. It's one of the more recent episodes and it features Cal. This class meets every other Wednesday for 6 sessions. And so you will certainly be hearing me talk about my hand-sewn shirt and seeing posts that I make about my progress. Over the winter on Instagram, I saw a Food 52 post about black sesame cornbread. And then when I went to find the recipe, the link was broken and I wasn't able to find it. This plagued me for a while, but I eventually thought through how I could make this black sesame cornbread on my own. And I have an adaptation of a recipe from the Moosewood cookbook, which my sister Jessica recommended, in particular the cornbread recipe. And I have twice made some really yummy cornbread with toasted black sesame kind of marbled through. It's delicious. Cornbread never really lasts that long, but I like it when it's getting kind of stale and then it's toasted with some butter. It's really good. It can also be made into a wonderful stuffing if there's enough left over, but we haven't gotten to that point where there's enough left over. So I will be posting in the show notes for this episode my recipe for the toasted black sesame cornbread. And like I said, it's very much adapted from the Moosewood cookbook version of cornbread, but with some of my own twists. So I hope you enjoy that. I've really enjoyed snacking on that and having it for breakfast as well. And the addition of the black sesame just sort of deepens and enhances it and also makes it a great pairing for coffee, in my opinion. April is National Poetry Month, and in celebration, I'm going to be sharing 2 poems this time from our poet laureate, Ada Limón. She has been poet laureate for 2 appointments, which is unusual. I have seen her read at the Geraldine R. Dodge Foundation Poetry Festival, though I don't recall the year, but I distinctly remember her reading. And my students at the time were very invigorated by her reading. She is super powerful and her poetry, I think, is very accessible. The first poem I'm going to share is more traditional in that The form is a poem in lines. It's titled The Raincoat. The Raincoat by Ada Limón. When the doctor suggested surgery and a brace for all my youngest years, my parents scrambled to take me to massage therapy, deep tissue work, osteopathy, and soon my crooked spine unspooled a bit. I could breathe again and move more in a body unclouded by pain. My mom would tell me to sing songs to her the whole 45-minute drive to Middle Two Rock Road and 45 minutes back from physical therapy. She'd say that even my voice sounded unfettered by my spine afterward. So I sang and sang because I thought she liked it. I never asked her what she gave up to drive me or how her day was before this chore. Today, at her age, I was driving myself home from yet another spine appointment, singing along to some maudlin but solid song on the radio, and I saw a mom take her raincoat off and give it to her young daughter when a storm took over the afternoon. My God, I thought, my whole life I've been under her raincoat, thinking it was somehow a marvel that I never got wet. The second poem I'm going to share with you is titled Calling Things What They Are, and it's a prose poem. This is a somewhat unusual form of poetry. I am very attracted to it. Instead of the line as the major unit of sound, the prose poem appears in sentences, and it will often look like one block of text on a page, but a short one. It's not like a novel or a short story. It's not a paragraph. It's a prose poem. One of the instructors I had in my MFA program called them smoke long stories. Often they have some storytelling or narrative elements to them, but very, very short, not a lot of depth, and they're often peppered with surprise or things that you wouldn't normally expect in a narrative. So it's a little bit of background for the prose poem. Some readers don't like them because when they appear on the page, the block of text can look overwhelming, whereas poetry in line sort of has like more breath and lightness to it. I will link to both of these so you can not only hear them, but see them on the page, and you can decide what you think. Maybe read some other of Ada Limón's poems. And sometime in April, the Library of Congress librarian will be announcing a new poet laureate for the U.S. So that is certainly something to look forward to during National Poetry Month. Here is Calling Things What They Are by Ada Limón. I pass the feeder and yell, "Grackle party!" And then an hour later I yell, "Morning dove after party!" I call the feeder the party and the seed on the ground the after party. I am getting so good at watching that I've even dug out the binoculars an old poet gave me back when I was young and heading to the Cape with so much future ahead of me, it was like my own ocean. "Tufted titmouse," I yell, and Lucas laughs and says, "Thought so." But he is humoring me. He didn't think so at all. My father does the same thing. Shouts out at the feeder announcing the party attendees. He throws out a whole peanut or two to the Stellar's Jay who visits on a low oak branch in the morning. To think that there was a time I thought birds were kind of boring. brown bird, gray bird, black bird, blah, blah, blah bird. Then I started to learn their names by the ocean, and the person I was dating said, "That's the problem with you, Limon. You're all fauna and no flora." And I began to learn the names of trees. I like to call things as they are. Before, the only thing I was interested in was love. How it grips you, how it terrifies you, how it annihilates and resuscitates you. I didn't know then that it wasn't even love that I was interested in, but my own suffering. I thought, suffering kept things interesting. How funny that I called it love, and the whole time, it was pain. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate your listenership. I appreciate the comments and messages I receive from listeners. And I hope that this week brings you some time for the crafting that you enjoy. Take care.